how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another Friday live stream here at On Texas Football. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorns, my man CJ Vogel over here. Also, Lifetime Longhorn Bobby Burton, the man, the myth, the legend, also as well. So we got a lot to get into. We'll talk Texas football, of course. But shout out to the Texas softball team after their big win yesterday. So shout out to them. They're going to play Florida, I believe, in the winner's bracket. So congrats to them. And, of course, the baseball team will be in action tonight, coming up later on tonight around 5 o'clock. So we can talk a little bit about that as well. But of course, it's always football season on Texas Football. So all of your questions, comments, thank you guys for joining. CB, what's up, CB? Thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate it. Always great to get the weekend started, right? Talking some Texas football. A couple of things I want to get you guys' thoughts on that I want to bring up. The Texas A&M rivalry. I want to get your thoughts about, you brought this up the other day, Bobby, about CDC's thoughts about when that game should be played. Apparently, Texas A&M Athletic Director Trev Alberts also has some thoughts about when that game should be played or when it shouldn't be played. We'll talk a little bit about that. I actually heard some audio of Sark at a coaching clinic talking about his culture and his philosophy. It's a brilliant, and we can't play the clip, but I'll paraphrase it for you. But I want to get you guys' thoughts about it because I think it gives you insight into his recruiting pitch and recruiting strategy these days. So we'll get into that too coming up. But of course, all your questions or comments, that is our top of mind for us. Of course, super chats jump to the front of the line. You can interrupt the show at any time. So just throw them out there. We'll try to answer as many questions as we can. I promise you that. All right. So gentlemen, first of all, how you feeling? CJ, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
Hey, it's a loaded day of sports. Of course, congrats to those Dallas Mavericks and fans in the chat. It's a big one. Let's get that one out of the way. But no, I mean, I'm all over the board. There's a lot of French Open tennis going on right now, college baseball regionals. LSU's down to Wofford in the bottom of the eighth right now, 3-2. Oh. Of course, Texas plays later this afternoon. Texas A&M just took a 7-0 lead. So looks like they'll be getting a leg up there a little bit in that regional. But that's to be expected. Tall road ahead for the Longhorns in College Station this weekend, but lots of sports, some hockey tonight. And of course, tomorrow is going to be the big day for all of us down at the Elite Camp. That's really, really exciting for everybody involved. And I'm excited for it.
All right. So I'm sure everybody wants to start off talking some recruiting because they, obviously it could be a big weekend for Texas. Everyone hoping it's a big weekend for Texas. Bobby, let's start there. Let's start with recruiting, and then we'll hit some of the questions because we already got a lot of recruiting questions starting to pile up. But let's start there. What are the expectations this weekend for Texas and some of these future 2025, 2026 recruits?
Well, I tell you what, it's mostly 26 recruits. There are some 27, almost no 25s to my knowledge. Yeah. Right. So this is all high school juniors to be, high school sophomores to be. The big subplot right now, if you just want to put it that way, is who's Sark like at the quarterback, right? I mean, who does he really want? You know, right now he's offered Dia Bell out of American Heritage in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, that area, and Troy Hume, a big right arm, 6'4" kid out of San Marcos, California, San Clemente area, down in Orange County, a little bit south of that even. Those are the two he's offered. Then there's a guy named Jake Fetty out of El Paso, Del Valle High School, who looks like a Colt McCoy / Brock Purdy starter kid. You know what I mean? He's undersized, but throws darts everywhere, moves around really well in the pocket and buys time. He's going to be in. And there's another half dozen quarterbacks. And we've talked to a number of them, and including the quarterback trainers of some of these guys. And it sounds like Sark has told them, let's put the ball on the field and see who's the best. And that's who Sark's going to go after and really push for. And now Troy Hune and his mom are set to arrive this afternoon. Dia Bell, his dad, Raja Bell, the NFL or the former NBA player, and mom are coming into town as well as a sibling. So it is it's going to be interesting. CJ will be out there tomorrow. The camp itself gets started around 12:30, but check-in starts at 11:30. And so there'll be guys coming in from around the country. There's a number of guys coming in from California, from Florida, Georgia, et cetera. And this is a part of that. You were just talking about recruiting, Rod, and what Sark's MO is. And the reality of it is he is pushing right now on the Texas kids early, as well as select guys from out of state. And I think quarterback's going to be a big one. Racine Guillory, the running back out of Aledo that's already committed to Texas, actually is looking around a little bit, it sounds like, maybe more so than what a quote-unquote committed player might be. Said he was going to drop a top seven after he's already committed to Texas. So not sure exactly. But the point that's being, awesome. The point being, he will be in town. The Texas High running back, Tre'Darrian Ball, will be there. There's going to be a lot of guys. I'm going like 20, 25 guys that have offers from Texas that are 2026 or below right now. I know, CJ, you're real high on the 27 quarterback from Bastrop. He's supposed to be there as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be, I think, the fourth or fifth time this spring that Weston Nielsen from Bastrop will be down at Texas. He was in, he came in, I believe, like March 8th, and again for the spring game. A.J. Milby went out to go see him throw, so they're familiar with one another. I know that's way down the road. We'll probably be looking at this situation this time next year for the 2027 class, but worth mentioning, he will be on campus, as well as the California quarterback, Brady Edmonds. So a lot coming in. Zypher Key out of Denton Geyer will be on campus as well. He's a talented name in the 27 class. They're getting a good look at a lot of arms. There's going to be a lot of talent to throw to, a lot of talent in the defensive back room as well. Two cornerbacks I wanted to mention. Of course, I've talked about Jason Bradford a few times. I've seen him in person a number of times, whether it be at Temple practice or at BAM's workouts down here in the Austin area. I think he's on offer watch. I think that's a 6'3" guy where if you're able to see him against live action, it's going to be very hard to not see him as that kind of mold that Texas has gone after in the defensive back recruiting as well. The other one is Favorian Martin out of Palestine, Texas. 6'1.5", 6'2", lengthy arms, about 9 or 10 offers at the moment. I believe Texas Tech, Missouri are a few that have already entered their names in the hat there. If you start getting ahead at where Texas is going in that cornerback market, length and speed, the combination is hard to find at cornerback. And I think those are two options right now that are kind of above on my board at the moment for that position in the 26 class.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island.
He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah, recruit the traits that you cannot coach. Right? Can't coach length, can't coach speed, recruit that, and then you can coach up all the other stuff. And I think that's what they're going to coach. Can't coach really. Versatility is tough to coach up. I think that's why they're recruiting so many versatile defenders. All right, because Jerry does a good job of this. So, guys, give me, because I'm a DB, but give me some, because he gave me the quarterbacks that I probably need to be watching that I watch some huddle on. Give me the DBs I need to watch, because I watched Dia Bell. I watched Troy Hume, so I'm up on those young guys, man. I'm impressed by it. We can talk about their skill set a little bit if you want to, but given the DBs I need to be watching, you said this is a good crop of DBs they're bringing in here.
Those two names up at the top, for sure, at the cornerback spot, Rod. And then I like Jermaine Bishop a lot out of Willis. He's a two-way guy, so you'll see him on both sides of the ball. Extremely talented athlete. It's all about fine-tuning those raw traits that he possesses right now, but top of the line athlete, great 100 meter time as well. And then if you go back to safety, two guys coming in that I think Texas is really pushing for, I think, are both in the top 50 nationally for the 2026 class. That's Isaiah Williams out of Fort Bend Marshall. Really talented kid, came in and visited earlier this spring, as well as Zaylus Hicks. And this is a kid out of Carrollton, Georgia, who Texas might not have had a great opportunity at in previous cycles, but yet you've seen that continue push into the deep south. He's a guy that made it in with his 7-on-7 team, 24K earlier this offseason as well. And, hey, you're getting a return visit from a nationally ranked top 50 safety out of Georgia. When's the last time that happened? I would say it's been quite a while, at least at the defensive back position out of that state. So Texas making some moves there. Those are probably the two other defensive backs I would keep a close eye on at this moment.
Nice. Braylon Edwards out of Duncanville, another one, CJ, that I think bears watching. Of course, everybody at Duncanville is seemingly bears watching these days. But Rod, for you, if you want to turn on a highlight film and be kind of have a little fun today, I'd say Isaiah Williams. Okay. That would be the one. You agree with that, CJ?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's probably the one that'd be fun for you.
Yeah, I'm hearing that. So he's out of H-Town too. These Houston DBs in next couple of classes for Houston DBs supposed to be pretty good then.
This past year is tremendous. I mean, the 2025 class is tremendous. I mean, two of the top guys on Texas's board are both out of Fort Bend. You got Cade Phillips out of Hightower, and then you had Caleb Chester out of Marshall. Those are two of them. Then you also have Jonah Williams at Ball High in Galveston. There are some DBs in Houston. They're also looking at some other guys. They really like a guy out of Ruston, Louisiana, named Aiden Anding as well, as a late bloomer of sorts. So all in all, good mix of places. The other guy that CJ mentioned, one of them from Willis High School too, Jermaine Bishop. He's another Houston area kid.
Yeah, living rent-free in UT. Blaine Bradford, I'm not sure if he's coming in. He visited April 13th, a really talented two-sport athlete, baseball and football out of Louisiana. I shot him a message. He said he was unsure. That was about a week ago. So he does not know if he will be making the plans. I at least have not confirmed if he'll be in it or not.
Okay. All right, good stuff there, guys. All right, let's hit some of the questions, and then we'll pivot and get to some of the other topics we brought up earlier. But let's start here with Sean's question, because I've heard this name a little bit, so I want you guys to give me a little synopsis on Dorian Brew. He said, do we have a shot at Dorian Brew?
Yeah, absolutely. Texas did a great job earlier this spring holding Dorian Brew on campus when it felt like it was Ohio State's to lose. Obviously, Ohio State has name offered, as well as Devin Sanchez, two five-star cornerbacks already in the class. Brew, whose family points to Ohio State, took a visit to Texas, and Texas held him to about 6 or 7 o'clock while everybody left up around 3:30, 4 o'clock. So he got the extra time with Terry Joseph, with Steve Sarkisian, with Pete Kwiatkowski. That went a long way for the Longhorns in this recruitment. USC looks like they'll have a fight here. Texas A&M as well, though. Texas A&M has four cornerbacks already in the fold right now in that class. Also have five offensive linemen committed in that class. For what that means for Michael Fasusi as well, I know they're going for a complete overhaul to get depth in that room for Mike Elko's defense. But, hey, you know, it's worth mentioning where they sit at the moment for those two guys. But Texas looks good early for Dorian Brew. Of course, June 7th is going to be his official visit. And after those official visits for Dorian Brew specifically, I think that's when you'll really start seeing some movement, probably as the calendar flips to July.
Nice. We started out talking about the quarterbacks. So my man CB and Jackson both have kind of the same question here. But Jackson Kimball, he wants to know, what are the odds we get a QB commitment this weekend? Hook him from Bastrop, Louisiana. Thank you.
Bastrop, Louisiana. That's about 30 minutes out of Monroe.
Wow.
Nice. And I've been there. There's a guy named Talance Sawyer that used to play for the Vikings that was from Bastrop, Louisiana.
Great.
I got to say, I think it's about a 50-50 shot someone's committed by Sunday. My take on it is they're going to decide. I really do believe that Sark's just going to put the ball out on the field this weekend on Saturday and figure out who works well with him, who throws the ball the best, who has good feet, all of those intangibles. Do they listen well? Can they listen and then put it together on the field once you talk to them? And of course, they've already looked at all the film of all these guys, Rod. You know that. Yeah. And furthermore, I think it's not just one-sided here. It's not just about who Texas wants. I think it's who wants Texas. And CJ, correct me if I'm wrong, but I get a distinct feeling that there are a couple guys right now that may be ready to commit to Texas if Sark tries to pull the trigger. That's my sense, and that's why I say it's 50-50. They may have someone in the boat by Sunday.
Yeah, that's certainly the vibe that I get, you know, kind of whether it be about Troy Huhn or Dia Bell. It feels like Texas is at the top of their list. It all depends on where the staff goes with those that quarterback decision as well. That'll be really interesting, of course. And luckily, Sarkisian, A.J. Milwee, being able to have these guys on campus to really get a view of them side by side and compare what they like, what they don't like, how they kind of carry themselves with receivers or linemen or what the camp-like situation is looking like. That'll be interesting for me. And I think for these guys, you'll have a decision probably by the end of the day from internally. Now, where does that go for them? I think you'll see at least maybe a phone call, a conference after the camp perhaps, just to give an understanding, an idea of where they sit at the moment on the Texas board. And I think later on into the week, perhaps into the first 2 weeks of June, I think you'll see a public announcement of where a quarterback will end up at Texas. So that's kind of my timeline. I think you'll see it a little bit later on into the month of June as to when a kid does commit to Texas.
I like both of them, Dia Bell and Troy Huhn. I will say it does seem like if you're just going off the prototypical start quarterback, that Troy Huhn is probably more of the prototype. But that doesn't mean that, like I said, Dia Bell's got a lot of those the traits that Sark covets. But he's more of a second reaction athlete at the quarterback position. That's one of his elite traits, is his second reaction ability. Now, I will say he has a maturity in his game where he extends the play to throw. He actually will move the pocket with him rather than scramble out of the pocket. He's moving the pocket with him. And I'm sure so that kind of brings him back to being more of a Sark kind of guy, because Sark wants quarterbacks that are going to, if they're going to extend the play, extend to throw the football downfield, not necessarily to scramble and run. But yeah, Troy Huhn, big, tall guy in the pocket. You know, he stands tall in the pocket, and he's got a hell of an arm. He really does. Got a quick release too, smooth throwing motion. So he just seems like he may be the more of a prototype. So I guess I was guessing if they were who's going to win out, maybe it'd be him. But then Sark, you know, he looks at the intangibles, right? He's got to be a competitor. He's got to be a leader. Those are the two intangibles Sark looks at quarterback. And the measurables, the two tangibles that he covets, are accuracy and quick hands, because he's got a deception-based passing game, right? He's all about play action pass, RPO, sleight of hand, the screen pass, the screen game. Everything is sleight of hand with your quarterbacks. And which one of these quarterbacks is really good at that? That also matters in his evaluation. So I love the fact that he's just bringing them in. Like, hey, just show me. Show me right here. And that's part of that competition, though. Sark's big about guys competing. Go win it. Go take it. And this may be what we're witnessing this weekend, potentially. So I like that.
I like your comparison. With Huhn, I agree with you, Rod. He kind of throws it over the top.
Yes. He's got
that over the top release. And so he's 6'4". He throws it like he's 6'5", 6'6". I mean, seriously, he does.
Yeah. Totally agree.
And the other thing I would say is I felt like I looked at two guys today. I actually watched three guys altogether. I looked at Troy Huhn again. I looked at Dia Bell. And for the first time, I looked at this guy out of El Paso, Jake Fetty is his name. And I thought that Huhn was the most natural passer. And if you were looking for a downfield thrower, he's a better downfield thrower, more accurate than a Trey Owens. Mm-hmm. Now, he doesn't have Trey Owens' arm strength, but he has better trajectory on deep balls. And he's got a big arm. Right. And he can see the field. He threw the ball in less coverage issues. Like I thought Dia Bell threw some questionable balls in his highlight film. But the one I was I'm not so sure the young man out of El Paso. When I tell you, I think he's like a starter kit for Brock Purdy and Colt McCoy. Wow. That's what he looks like. Mm-hmm. He's got great feet. Doesn't get too anxious about the rush. Will take off and run. Will also stay back and throw. This is Fetty here. You can watch him, guys. I mean, he's got some fun to him.
I like him a lot. My first time getting to see him in person was at the Elite 11 down in Austin. Of course, that was a camp that was highlighted by KJ Lacy, Keelan Russell, Kevin Sperry, the Oklahoma commit. And he was probably the top 26 arm in attendance for my money's worth. And when you kind of see him line up next to and I guess in front of or behind those 25 arms, I didn't see much difference in those drills. And I say this because the ball just kind of zips off of his arm. He has a fun release in which that ball, like, it was interesting to watch. You see it every now and then with quarterbacks where I kind of can only relate it to when you step in the box as a hitter and you face a pitcher throwing 85, and all of a sudden you get up there and that ball looks like it's coming in at 92. Right. It on the radar gun, it's going to say 85. He doesn't have the big arm, but then you see it in person and you see it up close and personal. And you're like, oh, that kind of had a little bit more zip than it felt like, right? Than it reads. And that's how it felt like whenever I was watching him throw at Westlake, at least on the run, whenever, you know, they were rolling out kind of on the run, getting the ball up in the air as well. So I was a fan of his off that initial watch. You go back, you watch the highlights, and it makes sense that, you know, he's about 15 to 20 offer guy. Texas Tech, TCU are the two schools he mentioned to me at the camp were really standing out and pushing for him early on. AJ Milby stopped by, got in contact with him this spring, of course, and now he's camping at Texas tomorrow. This will be an opportunity for him to make things really interesting with a good day. But I do think at the moment the decision will come down to a Diabel or a Troy Hune, all about preference for those two quarterbacks for the Texas staff. But I am a fan of Fetty, and I do think he has a bright future at the Power 5 level.
Love his feet. I think he has the best feet of the group in the pocket. He doesn't get over anxious, Rod. Mm-hmm. You know, when he escapes, he's escaping to throw.
Yep.
I just don't know. It's interesting CJ's comment about his arm. I don't know if his arm is in the same category as Bell's or Hume's is the problem. And so how much does Sark see that being an issue? But I mean, these are 40, 50 yard passes in the air here, right?
That's a good point, Bobby, because we've heard Sarkisian a number of times say, yeah, I'm recruiting a quarterback that can make every throw on the field. And you look at the arm strength in the room right now, what were the biggest highlights or like video viral moments from Quinn Ewers' high school days? It was him throwing a football about 75 yards, right? Like that was one of those big moments. We know Arch Manning has a gun and Trey Owens at 6'5 can sling that thing just about as well as any of them in terms of, you know, length, power, precision, whatever. Malik Murphy was very similar to that as well. And you can talk about what other kind of, you know, technique things that you had to work on with Malik, but there's no denying that he had a rocket on his right shoulder and he was able to gun some balls into tight pockets or, you know, for far down the field. So that to me feels like the overarching kind of trait that staff looks at the most when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks is, all right, are you accurate and can you throw the ball far? Because we can work on everything else. Whether it be timing, whether it be anticipation, that's something that we can work on, but you've got to be accurate and you've got to be able to get that ball down the field, especially in this offense with the speed that Texas is loading up on. I think that is a really high quality that they're looking for at the moment.
Hi, I'm Boo Corrigan in the chat who wants to know who would you rather have, Hune or Bell. I do think it's just a preference thing, and Sark's got preferences. Both these guys have when I'm looking at a quarterback, I try to identify the X-Man ability first. What do they do as well, if not better than everybody else and their peers? When I look at Diabel, he can throw the ball on the run. I mean, it's accurate, and it's on a line when he throws the ball on the run. That's actually one of his X-Man abilities, and his second reaction plays. To me, that's not necessarily compatible with Sark's offense. Sark wants to be on schedule as much as possible. That's why when his ideal offense was that Alabama offense with Mac Jones as the quarterback, because Mac Jones never even had to – he had to get to his second read. Well, I think he got to his second read, right, less than 15% of the time he had to get to his second read. I mean, it was on time, on schedule. And I would just say that Troy Hewitt operates that way. But, you know, picking a quarterback is like picking a significant other. The woman you marry or man you marry is not the hottest person you ever dated, right? So you're looking for a big arm, big, you know, tall, big hands, all that kind of stuff. That may not matter as much, because what matters when you're choosing a significant other, just like a quarterback, is compatibility. How compatible are you with that offense? How compatible are you with Sark as a play caller? And I just, in terms of compatibility, it may be Troy Hewitt and compatibility. But that's how I look at quarterbacks, Boo. I can't, you know, hi, I'm Boo Corrigan. I can't look at him like, oh, man, I got to have this type of guy. It can work a number of different ways. But Sark doesn't like, he doesn't necessarily covet second reaction guys. Some coaches, they go out of their way to make sure they get a quarterback that can improvise if necessary. Like, I need it. I need that ability to be able to improvise. I don't think Sark necessarily prioritizes that. Even Bill Walsh, the late, great Bill Walsh, greatest quarterback evaluator ever, he used to describe what he says was make sure I get it right here, an instinctive, spontaneous response to natural situations that develop in games. He said about 15% of the time, I can't coach it up. The scheme may fail you. Defense may make a hell of a play. I need you to be a football player and go out there with your instinctive, spontaneous, natural response and go make a play. And I can't coach that. And some coaches understand it. Sark, I don't think he really emphasizes or prioritizes that innate it ability. He doesn't care about that. And some coaches do. And I think Dia Bell may have more of that. You can tell in Troy Hill's game, he's trying to operate with it on the schedule. I can't believe it was his first time as a starter, first year as a starter. Yep. Because he operates like he's a veteran up there, like an old soul in the pocket. There's no chaos to his game, really. It's just smooth, on schedule. So I think that's, like I said, if I had to guess, that's probably where I would go. But I could be wrong.
I think Rod Babers has seen this game before. That's what I think, based on that analysis, because I'm kind of the same way. It's interesting because I think most people actually expect Texas right now, Rod, to go for Dia Bell. And I'm not talking about within the Texas community. I'm talking about outside, because Dia Bell is a top 20 rated prospect in the country. Mm-hmm. He's got a big last name. His dad played in the NBA, right? And I will tell you that when you talked about Bell throwing the ball on a line, he's got a hose. I mean, he's got a big arm, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you see those things combined, and I think you might be right. You know, there's some elements there, but does that fit what Sark wants? I don't know. I laugh, and that's why this kid from El Paso. I'm just telling you now.
Yeah, I like that film.
You want the guy that can keep you on time, and maybe do that little extra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what the Colt McCoys or the Brock. And I don't want to compare those. That's the kind of the idea, right? They can do that. And then they can give you a little something extra too. Now, neither one of those guys may have the hose, right? They may not have the one that gets you out there, but they get you into the right play and get to the right person when it's possible. And then when all hell breaks loose and you don't have anything, you still might have a little something because they're a good football player.
Yep, totally agree with that.
That's how I see the kid from El Paso, a little bit differently than the other ones.
I like that. It's a good breakdown. All right. Thanks for the question, guys. All right. Super chat. Football Junkie, thank you very much for the super chat. We appreciate it. Gentlemen, realistic expectations for Hill, Muhammad, or even Trey Moore this season. Will they all be SEC, all SEC candidates? Thank you very much, Football Junkie, for the question. Ooh. Anthony Hill, Malik Muhammad, Trey Moore. Will they be all SEC candidates, or will one or two of these guys separate? Which one, if you had to pick one, start with you, CJ. If you had to pick one of these guys, most likely to make all SEC, who would it be?
That's fun. We're entering that time of the year where we really start looking at other teams' rosters and depth charts and who are expected to be the star player there. If I had to pick one of the three to be an all SEC player for the Longhorns, not saying that only one of them can be, but to me, that's Anthony Hill. I think because he's in the middle of the field, because he'll be on the field as often as he will be, he'll be more likely to have impact splashy plays. And also because what we saw a year ago was very encouraging. You know, I think after he got an understanding of how to read zone fits, how to line up in that run game, he got better each week. And I thought at that moment, when you see him make big plays, it was always him basically planting a ball carrier in the turf like a flag, basically. And I was very encouraged by what I saw by Anthony Hill in year one. I think absolutely he's going to improve in year two after that game continues to slow down for him. What's going to be interesting for me is what does that cornerback rotation look like for Texas? We've talked about that room, of course, with Javion Cole coming in. How much depth do they have? How often do you see Malik on the field? Is that snap count growing from about 55 a year ago with that 55% a year ago with the starters last year to maybe 70, 75 this year with that thinned out room? And, of course, with what a lot of departures in the SEC off the edge room to the SEC or to the NFL in total, does Trey Moore jump into that elite group? It's going to take a big year for him, of course, because the SEC is known for their edge rushers. It's known for their pass rush and their physicality in the trenches. That'll be interesting in my eyes is will his numbers back up that of a Princely Umanmielen or, you know, some of those cats from Georgia who are looking at about 10 sacks a year. So that'll be interesting. But Anthony Hill is my pick there.
Rod, let me ask you this question. How many picks do you think Manny Muhammad will have this year?
Yeah, that's interesting, too. He's a ball hog, but once you establish yourself as a ball hog, his problem is the other cornerback position. It may just be easier to attack the other corner rather than, and he's not going to shadow the team's number one wide receiver, so there's no guarantee he's going to get a lot of targets. If you had to, I was the other corner, so I know this, right? I was the other corner, obviously Quentin Jammer, obviously Nathan Vasher. So if you had to choose between throwing at those guys, one is the all-time leader in interceptions at Texas. One was a top five pick. And throwing at that other dude over there, who you going to throw to? You're going to throw at the other dude. So I think that may hurt Malik Muhammad's chances of being all-SEC and making a lot of plays on the football, because I think offensive coordinator is going to go, man, I'm going with the path of least resistance here. Easiest route is to go attack that other corner, whoever that is. That's so. I think that'll hurt him. I think he's still getting – I got three interceptions for him.
All right. I of that group, I would go with Manny, because I think there's too many edge guys for Trey Moore to actually leapfrog some guys that are going to be top 10 picks. I mean, two SEC edge guys are expected to be top 10 picks. Just yeah. So, you know, I think Anthony Hill's still learning the position a little bit. And so I would go with Manny Muhammad of those three.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.
Like I said, that's the only thing I agree. I like Manny Muhammad. Only thing that would hurt him would be potentially, like I said, does he get enough of reps? Does he get enough targets in his direction so that he can get the opportunities to make plays? But I like the Anthony Hill thing. I got to go look at also the number of SEC linebackers that are going to be also in that conversation too. That's something you got to consider. So thank you for the question. We appreciate that. The super chat. Thank you, Football Junkie.
Calvin Banks in general, the most likely Longhorn to be a first team all SEC player. We agree on that.
Yes.
No question. Yeah. Sure. After him, honestly, he can be a number of different guys. I can see it going a number of different ways. You could get, you know, it's possible one of your wide receivers, Isaiah Bond or somebody, ends up on that list potentially. We all hope Quinn Ewers is that damn good. That'd be great if Quinn Ewers is that good.
That Texas, you know, it would have to take an Isaiah or an Xavier Worthy level season where you're getting 130, 140 targets to get into that conversation for me. Texas likes using a lot of their weapons. We saw it at times, whether it be, you know, Xavier Worthy as your go-to guy, A.D. Mitchell in the red zone. Are you going to have the numbers to back that up? Because this wide receiving group in the SEC this year is tremendous. You talk about Juice Wells at Ole Miss now. Of course, Luther Burden might be in the conversation for the best wide receiver in the entire country at Missouri. And I do think Oklahoma has the deepest, most talented wide receiving room in the conference right now. That group, that trio of Andrel Anthony, Nick Anderson, and now Deion Burks, I think is a very, very talented group. Could go nose for nose with just about anybody else in the country in my eyes. Who of that group, now adding in Isaiah Bond, of course, Matthew Golden, Silas Bolden, who of that group makes that jump into that statistical category to be all SEC? It might be one of those issues where you have too many chefs in the kitchen where the ball doesn't go to that big guy enough for that numbers to line up.
Bert Arvin?
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
I haven't looked at the kickers in the SEC, but he's one of the best in the country. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go there. I had a wild card for you. Since he's moving back to safety, Andrew Makuba.
I like it.
Oh, I do like that.
Let's see how he plays this year. Because I think he's now at his more natural position of safety instead of being at nickel. He's pretty good safety as a true freshman. So
I like that.
Interesting to see if he smells the ball a little bit. I think he could be pretty good. Caleb Downs transferred out of Auburn. Malachi Starks is really the only safety in the conference that everybody has circled right now.
You're right.
That's the young man out of Georgia that's a first-round pick most likely. So, there's some spots in the SEC that aren't really filled. Safety's one of them, I think.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Like that. All right. Thank you for the question, Football Junkie. We'll get back to some of your questions. But first, let's thank one of our fantastic sponsors. We really appreciate our friend South Point Dodge being part of the All in Texas football team. So, Texas football fans, if you're looking to score an easy extra point this season, when you get to the point at South Point Dodge, South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock and their award-winning sales staff. They don't play games, folks, and they're not about gimmicks. They're just about getting straight to the point, which is getting you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. You can go see them off I-35 in South Austin, or you can go to southpointdodge.com. Also, remember, if you're looking to sell your car, you can get South Point's best offer over the phone or online. You'll get top dollar for any make, any model, even if you didn't buy it from South Point Dodge. So you're trying to get the best deal, you will get that from my friends over at South Point Dodge, whether you're buying a new car or whether you're trading your car in. So go to southpointdodge.com. That's southpointdodge.com. We appreciate them. Home of the real deal. All right, let's get back to some of these questions, gentlemen. How about this one? Getting back to kind of the recruiting world, CJ, David Keith Williams wants to know, do you think Caleb Chester is a cornerback long-term, or do you think he will be better fit in college as a safety?
I think his frame certainly points towards a cornerback spot long term. He's about 6'1", 170, kind of wiry right now. And when you see him in person, the length at his arms really stand out to me. He has a speed to play cornerback. I think it certainly looks to me that he'll probably top out around 200, 205 pounds, maybe at the max. I don't think you're going to get any larger than that with his frame, which leads me to think if you're playing around 200 pounds, you're going to be stuck at cornerback long term. So that to me is probably where you'll see him. Of course, Texas, that defensive back room starting to look a little bit more put together the more that the days go on, and where Texas is going, of course, with who they're targeting, I think Caleb Chester is a cornerback in the eyes of the staff.
All right, good stuff there. A K drag for I think this question is interesting, but if I got the name right, and maybe I'm wrong here, he said, who would you rather have? K-Drag 4 says, who would you rather have? Ryan Williams. I think he means Ryan Wingo, if I'm not mistaken, or DK Moore. Is he talking about, is there a Ryan Williams in this?
Yeah, class? There's a Ryan Williams that was a 2025, class of 2025 guy that played with KJ Lacy out of Sara Lee.
Okay.
But he reclassified to be a senior. So he actually signed with Alabama already. So that's Ryan Williams.
Okay.
DK Moore and him were 1-2 for the best receiver in the class of 2025, in my opinion. I don't know. I mean, I don't know Ryan Williams enough to answer that, to be fair. I know DK Moore is special. You know, Ryan Williams may be special too.
Yeah. No, I've heard Jerry talk about DK Moore, put him in some pretty rarefied air talking about his skill set. All right, thank you for the question, K-Drag, for we appreciate that. Casey here wants to know from me, Rod, what improvement from technique do you want to see from the secondary this year versus previous years? Alignments and et cetera. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see them get aggressive, overly aggressive with their inside leverage. They give up way too many inside breaking routes. So their inside, I think their leverage right now is a little off in some of their coverages. So I would 90% of the time be inside leverage, especially with the corners on the outside, to use the sideline a little bit more in their technique. If I'm the secondary coach there, I'd probably try to play a little bit more man coverage. I know Sark wants to, but I mean, they've gotten in trouble. The reason this group gets in trouble, because when they play a lot of pattern match, they lose receivers in coverage. They have a tough time passing off receivers in coverage in their match coverage when they're trying to, route declaration, trying to see when routes are declared. They've had a tough time with that for the last 2-3 years. Playing man coverage makes all that easy. It's just man to man. You got that guy. I got this cat. You got that cat. And they got to learn how to defend bunch concepts a little bit better. Closely clustered groups of receivers. There are different techniques to it, different methods to it. But they've struggled with that too. Defending bunch formations, defending inside breaking routes. And I think a lot of that is because they've played some loose zone coverage with outside leverage a lot of the times. And I would change it up. I'd play, even if I'm playing zone, I'd play aggressive inside leverage on some of those zone coverages. And I'd play more man coverage. I think the guys can handle some more man. I know Malik Muhammad can handle it. I know he can. And I know Derek Williams can handle it. And I know Jadae Barron can handle it. Like, more and more, you're getting more guys in the secondary that you can trust in man-to-man coverage. Gavin Holmes and, Javion Cole, we'll see if we can trust those guys. But I trust a lot of the frontline guys in man-to-man coverage, and I think you should start playing a little bit more of that, too. I think that's the goal. So, all right, thank you for the question there. We appreciate that. All right, another question here that I think is interesting. This will get us to a conversation that I want to have about Steve Sarkisian. This is from Sean. He says, am I crazy for thinking that Sark will be a hot commodity in the NFL coaching, an NFL coaching candidate within the next 4 to 5 years? Could be. We've discussed this actually before. If he wins, a national title or multiple national titles, he'll be at the top of his coaching game at the college level. And I'm sure somebody, because of his NFL history and background, will pick up the phone and see if Sark is interested. That's just no doubt about it. And his system, it translates. I mean, a lot of the principles and a lot of the offensive philosophies that are now really kind of taken over and popular in the NFL, Sark utilizes those at the college level. The question is for Sark, is that something that he would be interested in? But I do think if he accomplishes his goal of being a championship coach, which he says he's obsessed with now, and wins a national title, he'll get an opportunity. Will he take the opportunity is the question. Who leaves Texas? When was the last time somebody left the Texas job, Bobby, to take another job?
I truly don't know if it's happened in the last 100 years. I mean, there have been people that have left because they've been asked to, but not exactly. Because they wanted to.
Yeah.
To your point, Rod, to your point. Yeah.
I had
something for you. I want to go back to what you were going to talk about earlier, too, in a second, Rod, about the clip you heard about Sark. And what you got out of him from a recruiting perspective and what he's looking for from a culture perspective. I want to talk about that. Two other things I wanted to mention first. One is Caleb Chester. We were talking about him out of Fort Bend, Marshall. I could see him as a nickel too, just so you know. I don't think he's a safety as much as he is a corner or a nickel. Just that's my where my brain goes with him, Rod and CJ. Yeah. The second piece was something that Sark talked about on Tuesday, and you two are the ones I wanted to talk to about this, so I'm kind of saved it a little bit. I was talking to Sark about the newcomers and who's going to play over the ball not going to play over the ball as far as defensive tackles. And this is a question, CJ, for you, because you did a lot of study on number of snaps. Sark was pretty specific that Norton of the group is the one that would play most over the ball of Savea and Jermaine Lole in that group. Okay. The question for you, CJ, is how often does Texas even play? But and Sark said this. He goes, look, our base defense, we would absolutely have a guy over the nose. He goes, but we don't play our base defense. We play really, you know, if you want to know the truth of it, I think we play our nickel package 75-80% of the time. So we've been making this big deal about who's going to be over the top of the ball necessarily. And in Sark's mind, that's a little mitigated by the fact of what their true defense is based on how many different snaps they have. So he wasn't as concerned about that maybe as some people were. I want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's very easy to look at the positions and use that base defense, right, as kind of the odometer or whatever, how you're, you know, looking at the room and saying, all right, we got to fill a hole here because that's what the defense on paper is supposed to look like. And, of course, in that look, they've got a guy right over the nose. But to the point that Sark was making, Bobby, I mean, we saw it a year ago where Tavondre Sweat at 360 was outsnapped in the A-gap by Byron Murphy, right? He saw more snaps over the A-gap and then Tavondre Sweat, whatever. And more times than not, those guys were not necessarily – you know, stuck in that spot. They were used throughout the line. We even saw Tavondre Sweat sometimes as a five tech, you know, outside over the tackle. So they use those guys pretty interchangeably in their alignment pre-snap. Of course, we see different looks as well. What's going to be interesting is how Johnny Manson puts his little touch on the Texas defense as well. But to this point, you know, we look at the numbers right now and I pull them up. Dominic Williams or Jay Toya, those were two guys that you expected to be over the A-gap more so than what Texas added with Jermaine Lole. Now with Bill Norton, that to me, he's a 50-50 guy. You know, he's on the field to play over the A-gap or to play over the center and play over the guard. He does not move from that nose to the three tech. That's where he is. The other guys are Jermaine Lole, Atiyah Savea. They all have snaps ranging all the way out to the edge. Not to say that they're, you know, certainly projected to be one spot or the other, but it gives you that freedom. And we've seen it with Alfred Collins and some Vernon Broughton as well. Vernon Broughton maybe a little bit less, but there's a lot of versatility with what you can do with these pieces and how you can intermittently change them to go all throughout the defensive line, which is going to be interesting. So it's going to be a big mix and match in my eyes of which guys, you know, kind of suit best next to another defensive lineman pairing. It makes sense for the Arizona kids to have a line of their own, maybe Broughton and Collins together, a Jermaine Lole and a Bill Norton. It'll be interesting. I kind of view it right now like a line change in hockey since I've been watching a lot of the hockey playoffs, right? You know, it makes sense that these guys work together so well to just throw them out there together. What it might look like in the fall, completely different than what I'm kind of theorizing about right now, but with so many bodies and the opportunity to stay as fresh as Texas can be with these six players, seven, eight, if you include Jarae Bledsoe and Aaron Bryant as well, maybe Sadir Mitchell, who knows what steps he takes over the summer and into the fall camp. But my point is you have a lot of bodies right now where you can mix and match to make it not so one-dimensional on that interior defensive line, which was the big question this fall, this winter, coming into the offseason. So I like what Texas has in the room. It's all about figuring out where they're best suited whenever the ball is snapped. And I don't know right now what those answers will look like. I just know that there are a lot of options for Texas to find that solution come the fall. So maybe it's not even anything that we've been worrying about in terms of the over-the-ball people or players or anything like that, but more so what the strengths look like together when they're on the field together, whether it be run fits, getting after the passer. And of course, Kenny Baker being a pass rushing guru from the interior, we'll see what kind of tips and tricks they're able to add to their bag before they get snapped off again.
Yeah. No, it's good breakdown. I thought we understood that Texas wouldn't be using an A-gap defender or a nose tackle a ton, but the games where you were going to need them Michigan, Georgia, Kentucky were big games. So it wasn't that, yeah, of course, you don't need a nose tackle all the time. But when you need one, they're like a plunger. You don't need a plunger all the time. But when you need a plunger, damn, do you really need one? Right? You're like, where the hell is that plunger? I don't know where it is. Oh, my God. This is chaos. There's all over the damn place. All right? So that's what it is, Sark. I agree with Sark. He's right about that. All right? But the A-gap defender is a plunger. You don't need him but a couple of times a year. But damn, when you need him, you need to keep from going all over the place, from fit, from hitting the shan. That's when you need him. So Michigan. I watched Ron Moore in that offense. He's talking about running using a fullback. He's talking about running 21 personnel. You need base for that. Georgia can run right at you, play power football, gap counter schemes, right at you, run downhill. They probably got the best interior offensive line maybe in the country. They're going to run downhill on you. You're going to need an A-gap defender for that. Kentucky, they're going to do the same thing. Got the second most experienced offensive line in the SEC. They're going to run downhill on you. So you ain't going to need them for, 80, 90% of the schedule pretty much. But, man, when you need them, you're going to need them.
Yeah. Got to have a plunger in the house, Rod.
Got to. Everybody, some of y'all are like, damn, baby, where that plunger at? We got a plunger in the house? If you don't got one, they cheat. Just go buy one. You go buy your plunger somewhere. All right. So I agree with you. Oh, here's my take on the Sark thing. So I heard Sark, this coaching clinic piece of audio from Sark, and he was talking about how he never asked his players to sacrifice. He said, I'll never ask players in my program to sacrifice. Nobody is asked to sacrifice in our program. I thought to myself, damn, that's interesting. Because as a player, that was one of the terms that coaches threw out there all the time. Sacrifice. You got to sacrifice. I need you to sacrifice for this goal. Sacrifice for your team. Sacrifice for the greater good and the cause, whatever it may be, and the goal we're trying to achieve. But he says, instead of sacrifice, I ask players to invest. Don't sacrifice, invest. And I started thinking about that and how brilliant this is, guys, when it comes to the language. Because think about the generation that we're dealing with now. And I'm not saying this generation is more selfish than the previous generation. But we all go through a selfish phase when we're young. Everybody goes through that selfish phase, especially when you're a teenager like that. So you're naturally selfish then anyway. But then we add social media to that. And add the, hey, make sure that you're brand aware. Make sure that you're building your brand. It's all about your brand and you. And we're in the transfer portal era. We're in the era of the NIL. So these players are way different than I was, than the players like me. Rob B was broke, and coach asked me to sacrifice. I'm going to sacrifice. These guys, they're making more money than some of these coaches. They got better cars than the coaches. So you don't ask guys with money like that who are self-interested to sacrifice because it doesn't translate the same. Because they're like, sacrifice? Why do I need to give up what I'm doing? I'm doing pretty well. Why would I need to sacrifice? Rob B was trying to sacrifice. I didn't have anything. I was broke. Like, hell yeah, I'd sacrifice because I want to, whatever you tell me, coach, for the greater good, I'll sacrifice. I ain't got nothing. These guys actually have something. And they've been building their brands for a while. So instead of sacrifice, it's the same, I think, point he's trying to make. But he says invest because he says, if you invest in us, then you'll get return on your investment. You'll get something in return. Now, coach was saying sacrifice, but you also were getting something in return, the life lessons. You were sacrificing for the greater good of achieving that goal. We all know there's return on sacrifice as well, things that you learn from it, cultivating your own character. But Sark doesn't want something to get lost in translation with these young guys. So he doesn't ask them to sacrifice. No, I need y'all to invest. And invest, it implies you're going to get a return on that investment. I'm going to get something back for me. I'm not just going to ask to sacrifice and get nothing back in return. So I think it's just his way of translating to a newer generation. Instead of sacrifice, what I was asking, it was like, no, y'all invest. That money y'all got, invest. Invest that time you got. Your brand, invest your brand in what we're doing here and for the greater good. And then you will get back that return on that investment. I thought it was a brilliant spin. I don't know if y'all have heard Sark talk about that, but I was impressed. I'm going to use it myself. I was impressed with it.
Hey, those financial literacy classes are paying off, huh? I mean, it's all about getting that that education there, huh?
So I've heard him talk about it before, Rod, and I agree with you. Brilliant. I mean, it's a new way. It's a new wave of thinking where I think that it's a, it's a 21st century way where you and I – were brought up maybe in the late 20th century, and it was all about sacrifice and What could you do for, think not what you can do for your country or what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Yes. Type of thing,
right. This is a invest in your own future, and perhaps sacrifice is part of that. You know,
yes.
You know, it makes it feel a little bit better and relate to generation, whatever we're at. Are we even on, what generation are we on now? Generation
I don't even keep
X,
up.
E, Y, Q, what the, I don't even know what we're at anymore. That's how old I am. But, you know, Sark certainly has a way of getting through to guys. Rod, I think he meets them at their place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things that I always found with excellent recruiters. They tend to meet the player and the parents at the level they need to be met at.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you? They don't need it. They don't force their own way down. General CJ. Generation CJ. There we go. They don't force their way. They don't make it their way to the highway.
Yep.
They actually meet the people where they are. So, you know, that's – and Sark is one of the better recruiters in the college game. I just – and I don't know that it's because he necessarily does this one thing better than everybody else. I think he does a good job of putting a great style of offense, has a – he's got all these draft picks he can point to now. He just – he's got a little bit of everything, you know, in my opinion. And then he's got the University of Texas behind him too. That helps, you know. So he's got a unique way of doing it, but I don't know that I can sit here and say this is the one thing that makes him different. But I do think that all great recruiters tend to meet people where they need to be met. To convince them that their school is what's best for them.
I like that. All right, let's, like Jerry says, kind of get through a speed round here, some of these questions, and knock them out before we get out of here. E. Kim, he's put this up here twice, so he really wants to know, CJ, what are we to look for from the elite camp outside of the 2026 quarterback pursuit?
Yeah, I think there's some really talented running backs coming in. Of course, Texas commit Racing Guillory will be on campus. How firm is that commitment? We'll see. Of course, he mentioned a tweet last night of a top seven coming soon. So who knows when you commit this early on? Of course, Tre'Davious Ball, a talented kid from Texas High coming in, Texarkana, a number of other really talented offensive linemen. Brett Polaget from IMG Academy, not expected to come in. Though you will see John Turntime, you will see Toa Katoa, Kimi Pepe, another IMG Academy offensive lineman expected to come in as well. We mentioned some really talented defensive backs earlier too. Svevorian Martin out of Palestine, Texas, Jason Bradford out of Temple, of course, Fort Bend Marshall, Isaiah Williams, and Zayla Six out of Carrollton, Georgia. Those are the four back there that I'm looking forward to. And to me, it's all about who gets offered from something like this. Of course, most of these kids have seen a Texas coach roll through at some point this year. Seeing them work out again against other top, kind of similar talented kids, who takes that step and who ends up with an offer? More so, where does that quarterback kind of pursuit and competition end up?
All right, good stuff there, CJ. Here's a question for you guys too from LL. What position does Texas see Michael Terry playing? The athlete in that 2025 class, I believe.
I don't know if it's important where Texas sees him playing, because I think he sees himself playing wide receiver. And if that's the case, I don't know that Texas is going to prioritize him that way. He could be a linebacker. He could be a safety. He could be this is a guy that is a elite high end athlete. I don't know that it matters is the issue. And I think that's why Texas is a little bit behind the eight ball on his recruitment. It's not Texas thinking that he's an elite player. They do think he's an elite player. He may not be an elite wide receiver, which is where I think he wants to play offense first. And he's not a quarterback. He plays quarterback in high school, Rod. So it's a projection that everybody's trying to make. He's played running back some. I could see him as a linebacker. I mean, look, he gains the right amount of pounds. He could be a defensive end. I mean, he's a big kid.
Wow.
I mean, CJ's seen him in person. He could, this is not a guy that necessarily has to stay at 215 or 220.
No, he can carry 240 pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so, you know, what he wants to do and what he might be best at may be two different things.
Definitely.
That's where Texas is going to be sandwiched, because other people are going to tell him whatever he wants to hear.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Man, he said defense, can play defensive end. He's got that kind of size. I got to go see this dude, man. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, Arakpo came into college yeah. at 195.
Yeah, you're right. No, he was – I remember that picture of him. He was slim. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. These guys can pack on weight the right way, and he's got a great frame. Okay. And he is that kind of athlete where you're just like, wow, what are you going to be? You know, I mean, I don't want to diminish him at all.
Okay, Bobby, is it an O.J. McClintock thing where remember O.J. was like
he's more athletic than O.J.
I know, but O.J. was like that too. O.J. played quarterback and like wide receiver.
I watched O.J. McClintock play Ty Warren. Do you remember Ty Warren?
I saw
those two guys over at the Round Rock State Dragon Stadium back in the day. Ty Warren literally. I mean, he suplexed O.J. McClintock one time, and I thought O.J. McClintock was not going to get up.
Oh, no, O.J. is tough as nails, man. That dude was tough. No.
They both, yeah. But I always thought O.J. would have been a great flex tight end.
No, my point is that they never found a home for him. He was an amazing athlete. But he played tight end. He played wide receiver, then played tight end, then played linebacker and DN. Never found a home for my man O.J., man. He was a hell of an athlete, though.
Yeah.
Michael Hovey wants to know, guys, does Johnson Rubel see much time in the secondary this season? I'm not sure about that. What are you guys' thoughts? I'm not sure if this year he sees a lot of time in the secondary.
Yeah, we've talked about, I mean, they've built back that depth, that top tier depth in that secondary with the addition of Andrew Mukuba. Of course, Derek Williams expected to take a step. You have Michael Taft returning. Oh, and how does Jelani McDonald figure into this as well? It might not be this year, but his time's coming. I don't think you'll see him running with that first or second group immediately, but he is a very smart, cerebral football player, and who knows, maybe a move down into the nickels in the cards to get him on the field earlier, but right now I think you'll see him more down the road than immediately this year, which is fine. True freshman.
I'm going to say this, as it relates to him, as it relates to JJR and Xavier Filsimi, they both, their future for this season, not well into the future, but just for this season, is highly dependent on Jelani McDonald and whether or not Jelani McDonald is actually going to be a safety. Okay. And, you know, if Jelani takes to safety like they want him to, then I don't think you're going to see much of JJR or Xavier Filsimi this year. If Jelani McDonald gets his feet tied up, doesn't have good eyes for safety, my answer would change immediately. So that's what we got waiting on. That's the point. You know what I mean? Yeah. Is Jelani McDonald really a safety? If he is, it's going to be hard for JJR to get on.
Okay. Good stuff there. All right, we do have a super chat. I guess super chat to end the show. It's a perfect way to end the show from Jay Lee. He wants to know, guys, Texas has not offered one super blue chip in the 2025 class. Why wouldn't they take a shot at all the top guys? Is that indeed the case, Bobby?
Blue chip what?
I don't know. Super blue chip recruits, I guess. What's a super blue chip?
I pulled up the top 10. I'm looking at it. Bryce Underwood, quarterback, Tavian St. Clair. This is the top 10 in order by the composite. Quarterback's currently committed somewhere else. David Sanders, not committed. Offensive tackle, looking like he'll stay on the East Coast. Texas, of course, likes Michael Fasusi a lot. Doesn't make sense there. Devin Sanchez, a guy that obviously committed to Ohio State. Texas has been around a little bit as well. Corian Moore, Texas is in the fold for. Name offered, committed to Ohio State. Jonah Williams, Texas trying to get an official visit for. So they're in the fold there. There's a couple guys that just don't make sense on the big board. Of course, they're shooting out offers to all the big-time guys in the state. They've gone nationally for big-time five-star guys as well in the past. Brandon Baker, Ryan Wingo, CJ Baxter. So it's not out of the question that Texas isn't not trying for these guys, right? They are, but it's all about finding the right fit, not just praying that these guys also have that same interest in the school itself.
Jay did specify he wants to know D linemen. So I guess he did specify just now D linemen.
I think part of the problem comes is there's only one in state that they've really liked enough to go on, Jay, and that's Zion Williams. And so that would be part of it. I'm sure they would love to have Elijah Griffin, or they did go by Zephyr Hills to go see those guys. I mean, they went by to see these guys. I don't think they got any uptake. It's not that they haven't offered them or wouldn't take them in a heartbeat, you know. So I would wait on that from a defensive line perspective.
All right. Before we get out of here, let me thank another one of our fantastic sponsors, friends over at Flat Creek Estate Winery. Did you know that the most awarded wine in Texas is actually the vineyard closest to Austin? That's right, folks. Flat Creek Estate Winery is just minutes away from downtown Austin, and they've won award after award this year for their vintage wine, Super Texan. Super Texan is now available at your local Specs, so give it a try. Of course, Flat Creek is also a gorgeous venue with barbecues and wine tastings every single weekend. It's perfect for a day date with your significant other. You can go check them out at flatcreekestate.com. I can vouch for the Super Texan. My wife loves it. Matter of fact, you guys saw me enjoy some Super Texan on the winning drive to kind of toast to the end of the show not too long ago. Yesterday, I toast with the Rosé from Flat Creek Estate, and it is fantastic too. So I would recommend the Super Texan, but also the Rosé. The Rosé is great. So thank you to our good friends over at Flat Creek Estate. Flatcreekestate.com is where you find out more about them, or just go to Specs and you can pick up some Flat Creek Estate wine there. All right, thank you very much to Flat Creek Estate Winery. Thank you very much, CJ and Bobby, for all of your input and wisdom. We appreciate that, all of your knowledge. Thank you for everybody out there for participating in the show. Really appreciate it. You guys helping us build this family here at Own Texas Football. Thank you to Matthew behind the scenes, because none of this would be possible without Matthew. He's the real MVP. There's no question. Thank you to our sponsors, South Point Dodge and Flat Creek Estates. Thank you to all you guys with the super chats. Really appreciate that. It means a lot to us. And everybody, have a great weekend. Oh, this weekend, don't forget, we got what we got coming up, Bobby, on the channel.
Big recruiting weekend for the Longhorns. So we spent a lot of time talking about 2026 quarterbacks. CJ is going to be there early tomorrow morning at DKR at check-in. We've got a conversation, actually, that for Saturday conversation. CJ and I are going to talk a little bit about that 2026 recruiting class and all the guys coming in. Should be interesting.
Oh, yeah. So, all right. A lot of stuff on the show, on the channel this weekend. So make sure that you stay tuned. CJ, thanks for the time, brother. Thank you, Bobby. And for the On Texas Football family, from all of our sponsors, for my man Matthew behind the scenes as well. Until next time, hook 'em horns.
Hook 'em.